Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 4th, 2025. Well, last month, for the third time ever, the third English king named Charles addressed personally the speech from the throne to commence a new Canadian government. In it, His Royal Highness stressed the importance of independence to his forefathers, former colonial subjects, still subject under law, and the necessity for their undying vigilance in its defense. Last week, in a demonstration of his independence of the king's speech, or perhaps just poor listening skills, the Canadian Prime Minister suggested a willingness to go along with America's new military industrial strength, treasure siphoning Golden Dome missile defense scheme, something Donald Trump promises at a reduced price to Canadians if they so choose to become his special number 51. Eve Engler is a Canadian journalist, author, and activist. He's written 13 books on and about Canada and its perfidious foreign policy, the latest being Canada's long fight against democracy. Eve was recently out of the country, a brief sojourn away from home to better hone, perhaps, his appreciation of the absurdity that is Canada in the silly summer of 2025. Eve Engler in the first half. And over the weekend, the University of Victoria hosted the first Vancouver Island Anti-Fascist Youth and Student Congress. The Congress was convened, they say, because of the urgent need of response to the threats at home and abroad to peace, human rights, and to the environment. Tyson Riel Strandland is secretary to the Popular Democracy Movement and served as media liaison for the event that offered, quote, an array of community leaders and experts discussing various expressions and aspects of fascism, ranging from militarism and war, Zionism, colonialism, and neocolonialism to fascist ideology. Tyson Strandland and anti-fascist youth raising the red and black in Victoria in the second half. But first, Eve Engler and Mark Carney's super fast Volt Face. Welcome back to the show, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, Eve, before we get to Mark Carney's kink, why were you in Europe? What did you see and what did you do?
I was invited to speak at a forum that was partly put on by this new Norwegian political party. The talk was about propaganda, but the political party FOR is its acronym. I don't understand Norwegian, so but it's basically it was a party that was created because the former most left-wing party represented in parliament had gone along with the NATO proxy war. And so some of that party and others broke from it. And there's quite a long process of signature gathering that requires physical signatures gathered to become a political party in Norway. And they had, I think at the start of the year, they got the sufficient number. And so now they're a registered party. And I did an event in Oslo with Aaron Matze and Glenn Deason. I think people might be familiar with Glenn Deason. He's a candidate. He's one of the he's sort of like the second. He's not the spokesperson for the party, but he's sort of the second top candidate that they have running in the upcoming elections. And the party had just by chance they had gotten a whole bunch. They got some funding to take out ads. About instead of sending more arms to Ukraine to put that money into social programs. So they'd taken out ads in the Oslo metro just sort of before the event that I was at. And it became a big kerfuffle because the media was trying to frame it as the money had come from Russia. And anyways, they got like the night I got there, actually, they... the spokesperson and Glenn Deason were on the most important media debate program in the country to reveal where the money had come from to pay for these ads. And it was this big deal. And so actually at our 3-hour long sort of political lecture, like basically all of the corporate media from Norway, all the established media actually showed up and was like, there was cameras there for like 3 hours. So the event was a good turnout, but it was also this sort of big political kind of affair because the party had gotten a lot of attention in the recent days over its position against putting more resources into the NATO proxy war.
Well, the media reaction aside, how are you guys received? Is this can you get a sense of the sentiment in Norway?
Well, the on Palestine, there's lots of opposition to what Israel is doing. It's quite widespread. A neighborhood that was kind of an immigrant neighborhood of Oslo, just close to where I stayed, off of downtown. There's tons of graffiti. There's tons of well, all across the city. There's flags. You see kafirs. Now on so there on Palestine, people would be far more sympathetic than in Canada. But on Ukraine, it's a really sensitive issue, and it used unanimity in parliament. And in fact, the party, when I was there, they organized a Palestine rally in front of parliament, which I attended, and they've done that. I think they've done that, in the past. But there was a big counter demonstration, and sort of the pro-NATO, including elements of the Ukrainian diaspora community, had a counter rally. And I talked to a number of the people who were organizing this, were part of this counter rally, and they were just completely appalled. They were just over it. It was actually pretty wild how angry they were about the fact that this political party was starting to question the unanimous position in Parliament on more support for the NATO proxy war. So I think that the politics, obviously in Canada, there's no political party that questions Canada's support for the NATO proxy war, but my impression was that that might even be more of a hot button issue there. But on Palestine, pretty much most of the political parties at least sort of rhetorically criticize what Israel does, whether they're willing to go much further than that. As I pointed out in my talk, I said, well, so if you're saying that how many Norwegian politicians are calling for sending weapons to the resistance in Gaza or in the West Bank for that matter, while they're spending large amounts of resources in the resistance to Russia, they're not doing the same, and where they haven't even broken off diplomatic relations, they haven't. There's all kinds of things they haven't done with Israel, but obviously, so there's a bit of a double standard there in official politics. So Norway is, it's a NATO member state. I joked a bunch about Stoltenberg is the former secretary general of NATO who stepped down not long ago. He's former Norwegian Labour Party prime minister, and so he's, one of Norway's most important exports of recent. So my sense is, yeah, the politics are different in Norway in terms of NATO and Israel, with the two main issues kind of on my agenda. But they, are also, of course, fairly similar to Canada.
As far as NATO goes, now you mentioned that the postering was about social service cuts. How do Norwegians receive the idea that of this ramping up of militarism, Russia and Gaza aside?
While the public is on board with the sort of NATO proxy war, and they've completely, bought into Ukraine's just defending itself, and Russia's all the aggressor, and NATO and Washington and Ottawa and others didn't play any role in provoking the war, which is more or less the opinion in the dominant, opinion in Canada. When it comes to, are we willing to cut a whole bunch of social services to put more into the military, then all of a sudden public opinion shifts, and it becomes less supportive. I can say on the Canadian side to this thing, I mean, our defense minister at the CANSEC forum Tuesday last week, so a week ago, he came out and he kind of almost seemed to celebrate the fact that in the Nether or in Denmark they just got rid of a public holiday, apparently to put more resources into the war machine. And also in the Netherlands, again, our defense minister at the arms forum talked about how they had a 22% across the board cut to government, federal government positions, except for the defense ministry, as a way to get more money, more resources to put into the war economy. So we are going down this path. I mean, the European countries are further along in doing this in terms of cutting social services to put more into military spending. But we have more and more calls. This week, the Globe Mail editorial board had a opinion making this exact point and saying, you know, we have to start cutting back on OAS, old age assistance security, and get rid of the dental care plan. And what was the other one? They called for cutting another one.
Equalization payments.
Equalization payments. Also, we can hit this 2%, which is now turned into 3.5, and it's not really just a 3.5% of GDP because it's supposed to be another 1.5 in some sort of quote unquote security related spending that NATO is going to the NATO Secretary General is asking all member states to agree to, and then I guess it will be, you know, finalized or concretized at the summit later in June. So we are seeing this incredible wave of push to increase military spending, and for the most part in Canadian political discussion, the what will we get rid of to do this has mostly been off of the agenda. But now we're seeing the politicians and the pro-military media going, you know, taking the next obviously logical step and saying, well, you know, we got to start slashing stuff if we're gonna, you know, hit these targets, and we'll see what kind of pushback. I asked Don Davies, the interim leader of the NDP, when I was in Ottawa a week ago, when I saw him leaving Parliament. I asked him, you know, if the NDP would call for Canada leaving NATO if NATO membership requires 3.5 or 5% of GDP on military spending. He wasn't willing to say the NDP would call for withdrawing from NATO, but he was willing to say that he didn't even agree with a 2% target, and that that other politicians haven't been clear about what they're actually going to cut to even get the 2%, let alone the 3.5 or 5% target. So, you know, anti-war, peace-minded, and just quite frankly, those who want, you know, money for public housing, money for you know, clean water on reserves, those who want money for transition away from fossil fuels have to start confronting this rampant militarism.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Engler. Eve's a Canadian journalist, author, and activist. He's written 13 books on and about Canada and its perfidious foreign policy, the latest being Canada's long fight against democracy. We're talking about his recent trip out of the country. And Eve, when you talk about Don Davies, the interim NDP leader or acting leader for the moment, I thought that I was watching it on Twitter, your little film clip of your interview, and you've been buttonholing a lot of these different people. And to his credit, Don Davies didn't call you a phony faker guy like some others have called you and attacked you for not representing the truth.
I didn't. Once I ended the clip, he actually said something.
Did he call you all those things after you were off air?
No. He said something very nice, but it was, you know, off the record, so I'll let it. But he was actually quite effusive with praise, I would say.
Well, of course, I was referring to Mark Miller. Do you want to do a one,
oh,
like 15
yeah, well,
seconds on Mark Miller?
It was quite a contrast because, so on Thursday, I spoke in Ottawa, and so I decided to go earlier in the day to, quite honestly, follow what I've seen some these right-wing media, Rebel News and Desi Media, do in Ottawa, which is they try to interview MPs and ministers as they leave Parliament. And I didn't really know the setup exactly. So I went to Ottawa. I went earlier in the day to Ottawa from Montreal with the intention of trying to, run into different politicians, either on Spark Street or right up at Parliament. And in fact, this is it was a much easier kind of thing to do than I imagined. And it's to me, it's very quite an embarrassment that the left doesn't have a media outlet doing this, what the right wing outlets seem to be doing. So I was on Spark Street, which is the pedestrianized street, just a block and block over from Parliament, basically. And there's some, I think there's some politicians who have their offices. I don't really know, but there's some government buildings that are sort of on Spark Street. But mostly, it was like the Rib Fest was taking place, and I was just walking around, and I was walking around with the intent of running into politicians. Mark Miller was not, I didn't think of him as somebody who I would like to run into, but I ran into him. I've had many interactions with him here in Montreal. And he just basically went on in a tirade. First off, when I see him and I come up, I say, Mr. Miller. He takes like 7 seconds pretending like he doesn't recognize me or didn't see me, and then does this,
Well, he does have a pretty long nose, and I think those 7 seconds were the time it took for his gaze to traverse the length of his nose to you.
Yeah, it might have been that, but so he just then does this whole tirade about a phony and a huckster and this and that. He goes off on stuff, and then he actually bumps into me as we're walking along. He then posts, when I post a video of him, his tirade against it, he posts that I initiated contact with him, which is just simply not true.
Well, that's the old Zionist trick. Oh, stop attacking me and all
Yeah,
that.
as you're, yeah, and so it's the whole play of also of being, he's playing himself victim here as he's backing. Well, the issue I was raising with him was a concrete issue that he was minister responsible for. He has condemned protests at McGill. He's been very aggressive in demonizing those opposing genocide. But that's just sort of as an MP or on his Twitter. But as the minister, he oversaw the whole policy around people getting, refugees from Gaza coming into Canada. And it's an outrageous policy where it was a really low number. I think they initially was 1,000 or 1,500. They said okay, and then they boosted up to 5,000. We would take 5,000, but then they brought in these just like incredible security checks, and so it was difficult enough to get out of Gaza. But then the Canadian government has these like outrageous security checks where no one can basically fulfill. And I don't know what the final number is as of today, but Le Devoir, not long ago, a few months ago, I wrote a piece about this. It was like 650 people who got in this program. Now, concurrent with that, they brought in a policy around Israelis' ability to just basically any Israeli in Canada can just apply for permanent status. And it's like, more than 10, I think it's like, we don't know the exact number, but it's like at least 10, minimum 10 times more Israelis have come in than those facing the Holocaust. So the nation where that's committing the Holocaust, Israel, is more than 10 times as many people have come into Canada under these new policy changes as those who are the victim of it. And the Israeli number is probably substantially actually higher than that. But so I just was going to ask him about that, and he wanted nothing to do with it. He wanted to just basically say I'm some sort of I don't know what, I'm a
You're a
harasser or
phony and stuff.
whatever.
Well, yeah, I wonder too, though, how that compares with the Syrians and those that were favored of the head chopping Idlib variety that were brought into Canada as well. Was that under his term?
I think that begins, he's much later. He only becomes immigration minister, I don't remember the exact date, but I think about 2 years ago.
Well, now, Eva, I hadn't planned to talk about this, but I mean, as we're on this sort of vein, Gary Anandasangiri, forgive me, Gary, our current immigration minister, there's been some big changes just announced in the so-called Open Borders, or sorry, Strong Borders Act, not open, I think the opposite of that, Bill C-2. Have you had a time to look at this at all?
I haven't just I've basically just seen the headlines. I haven't been able to delve into the more. I see that they're basically, as part of his as they're standing up to Trump, they are doing everything that Trump wants, kind of dynamic. But I haven't got into the details of what all this is.
Yeah, and it seems that there's some overreach here, and I see that Dimitri's written a little bit about it, but it seems that the border security is the wedge that is used historically by far right-leaning administrations all over the place. Well, and the other way then that Carney, who as I mentioned in the introduction, he made a big deal of standing up to the Americans in the face of the trade war and all the rest, and waved the flag as everybody did. His turnaround has been remarkable, as exemplified by his willingness to sign us up to this Golden Dome scheme that Trump has floated. This is kind of like what the protective dome over Israel that doesn't actually protect, it seems, or at least not completely, but it's a great conduit for endless amounts of public money into the coffers of military procurement. What's your take on Carney? And why did you call Carney kinky? Is that part of it? His quick turn, or is there something else? I don't know.
No, I just called him. I think it was Kinky Carney. Sorry, Kinky Carney agrees. Canadians don't want Kinky Carney's Trump golden shower. I was playing off of the
Golden
Trump
Dome.
golden
I'm sure they don't want his golden shower either.
shower. Oh yeah, golden dome shower. So that was what it was.
Jesus.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously, this is he's making a mockery of his we're going to stand up to Trump, and we're changing the promise that he made repeatedly. He said over and over again during the election that we're shifting gears on security relations and other, you can't trust the US anymore and Trump and this and that, right? And so that's pretty egregious. And then the bigger picture of what he's seems to be on board for, which is the weaponization of space, or further weaponization of space by the US, which is what the Golden Dome will mean. The details are all a bit unclear at this point, but that's what the ultimate project would be, which is tied to spurring an arms race, which is tied to increasing the likelihood of nuclear war, and as you mentioned, which is a huge sop to the arms industry. And it's the minimum number is 150 billion, but no one believes it's going to be under half a trillion. And some estimates suggest it's going to be a trillion or more for this project. And Trump has himself said it's Canada can pay $61 billion, or it's free if we agree to be annexed. So this is a Carney. It's not, in one sense, I don't think it's a surprise. I would have thought what it would be a little bit of a surprise that he was so open about his announcement. Funnily enough, Trump's exchange. The Golden Dome for annexation might make it more difficult for Carney to continue, down that path. But this is just a sort of in our face. Okay, we make a promise during election, and right away we willing to do whatever the U.S. empire wants. But this is kind of happening across the board, right? There's stories about this big night goggles that the Canadian military is purchasing, and I think hundreds of millions of dollars, and they just cut out the French company. So it's only two U.S. companies, actually Elbit U.S.,
Oh, great.
Israeli American branch of the Israeli company, I believe. So even this is just on these are superficial things, right? These are just like even new arms procurement. They're continuing to just purchase from the U.S., let alone the much more fundamental and important element, which is this whole all these relations that the Canadian military has with the U.S. military, deployments and Operation Proteus in the occupied West Bank, assisting the U.S. there, assisting the U.S. in Central
But
Command,
Eve, the RCMP are on the cases in Gaza now. David Mastracci of the Maple has been, he mounted a thing called Find IDF Soldiers. Now the RCMP, when interviewed by the Star just last week, said, "Oh yeah, well we've got this investigation, ongoing investigation into crimes against humanity and war crimes under the Canadian Act of that name. In the final 2 minutes, Eve, what's that about?
Well, that's a good development. It's probably not, it's superficial, but it's definitely a good development that the RCMP has pub is announcing. They didn't do it themselves publicly when they announced it back in early 2024, but it's come out now that they're doing this investigation. What the key here is, we need to ramp up the pressure on the RCMP to actually do this seriously, do what they did with Ukraine back in 2022, where they set up a hotline, they took out advertisements, they put out all kinds of press releases, they made a big thing about investigation. We know there are many Canadians that have been fighting in killing in Gaza, part of the genocide. We Israeli officials and soldiers come to Toronto and Montreal quite regularly to talk about it. People who've been involved in violating international law, war crimes, and the Canada's War Crimes Act. If they come to Canada, they can be detained and investigated and charged. Now, my understanding, or the RCMP can only lay out the case here. Ultimately, for this to move forward under this the War Crimes and Crimes Against Humanity Act, the Justice Minister needs to okay it moving forward, which is gives a whole bunch of political leverage. It makes it, fit within this legislation, fit within Canadian geopolitics. But nonetheless, the RCMP can do its part in
Is
upholding the
that
law.
still Mendocino, the Justice Minister?
No, the Justice Minister is now, I believe, Sean Fraser, I believe, is the new Justice Minister. So this would probably go right to the PMO if the RCMP actually put together a proper file and said, this person, this person, this person should be charged under the War Crimes Against Humanity Act. I think this would become quite a big political issue, and I would go right up to the PMO, to Carney. We should put in the pressure on the RCMP. This is something they should have obviously done a long time ago. And we know the RCMP has refused to apply Canadian law when it comes to Israel. The most, clearest example is the Foreign Enlistment Act, which 5 years ago they were given a whole dossier of Canadians violating the Foreign Enlistment Act and inducing Canadians to join the Israeli military, and they basically just ignored it, even though thousands of people emailed them. So they have a history of legal exceptionalism for Israel and Canada that we need to obviously defeat. But this announcement, it could be a small piece at chipping away at that legal exceptionalism granted Israel.
Well, Eve, we're out of time. I wanted to talk to you about Haiti and Africa. You've written books on those. You've written books on Canada's history with Israel as well. Go to Eve's website, eveangler.com, Yves angler.com, to get the links to all of his stuff and all the amazing work that you're doing. We don't have enough time for me to go into it all right now. But I certainly appreciate you taking a minute or two out of your busy schedule to talk to us here.
Thanks a lot for having me.
My great pleasure. I want everyone else to stick around. I'll be joined by Tyson Strandlin. We're going to talk about the anti-fascist flag waving here in Victoria that went on over the weekend. Thanks again, Eve.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.
As they wait in line, instead of dying of starvation, forced to risk their lives for a bag of flour, what remains of the Palestinian nation? Did they pass a resolution in the parliament somewhere? Did they castigate the killers for their crimes? Did they say that sometime soon they might do something too late, just like every other time? Sorry, I can't hear you above the noise of the Israelis gunning down little girls and boys. I'm just listening to the wailing of a million children dying. I'm hearing on NPR and BBC Israeli fascist politicians lying. Meanwhile, someone said something about someone.